So, as I've been home with the kids for the last almost year or so now, supporting things at school, it means that I've gotten to learn or relearn a few things along with them as I've supported their remote lessons while they've been home. One of the things that came up recently with Cohen as he was learning about different animals is they were able to learn about some features that different animals have and how that can tell you things about the animal if you can see that feature on them and what that means that their life might be like. So one of the things in particular that they point out is that animals that end up being prey have their eyes more on the sides and top of their head. And that way they're able to have a broader range of vision, and so they can see more things that potentially might be looking out for them. On the other hand, animals that will have to hunt in order to get their food will have their eyes more on the front of their heads, and that way that they can focus and be really specifically kind of locked in on whatever it is that they need to hunt down. And so a way that we could kind of think about this for Cohen and picturing how that actually works itself out in real life is we have a number of cats at our house, and one of them now in particular has been an outside cat. We've just never really been able to keep her in. She always bolts as soon as she gets a chance. And she will sometimes like to, when there's not snow on the ground, hunt around a little bit for critters around our yard. And so he can see, you know, if we're watching her in the window, she's like creeping and very focused and going slow, right? And can't, but doesn't want to give things away too soon. So there's a lot of purpose and patience and things about what she's doing. And maybe we can't see it, but we know somewhere there's some little critter, probably a vole or a mouse or something, that's frozen wherever it is, and trying not to move, but making sure it has a wide range of vision of where all the threats might be from, and might even be prone to maybe bolting a little bit too soon, thinking it's avoiding something, but could be getting right into another danger instead. And so that helped Cohen kind of get that lesson a little bit. And it was funny, I hadn't really thought about the different features of animals being that specifically categorized in a while before, so it was an interesting thing to relearn for myself as well. And it may sound kind of strange, but as I've been coming into the season of Lent this week and thinking about the scriptures that we have, that came to mind for me as a little bit of a metaphor of how we can sometimes approach Lent and what it means to focus our attention on God. Right? We have that tradition of either giving things up or taking things up for Lent. And that's even gotten itself broadly into popular culture, whether everyone who is participating in one of those practices feels especially religious or spiritual or not. So there's the scattershot, more kind of vole approach, where if we feel like, well, I should probably do something, but I don't know exactly what to do this year. Maybe I've given up coffee before or chocolate or something, but I don't know if I should do that. Let me just kind of think of what all the options are. And there's a lot of options. If you do an internet search for things to give up for Lent, you can feel a little bit overwhelmed. And some of the ones that I saw that, you know, maybe for some people they mean something, but also maybe feel a little bit like we're stretching or grasping at straws a bit, include people giving up Target because it's their favorite place to shop, giving up cream and sugar but not their coffee because the caffeine is still important for functioning, giving up condiments in their sandwiches or burgers, giving up listening to audio in the car, giving up being the person in your house who has the remote control, giving up using a mirror or using filters on your photos with your phone, giving up your snooze button so you wake up right away, and even giving up sleeping in a bed. Again, for different people's life circumstances and what their relationship with God and other people is like, it may be that that is meaningful, but we could also hear a lot of ways where it might just feel like, let's just throw things against the wall and then say we're doing something. On the other hand, some people might take that very focused, cat-like, predator approach, very specific, trying to show the personal control and discipline that they can have during the season of Lent. Some examples of this might be giving up social media completely and showing I don't have to get sucked into that all the time and I can take a break. Giving up caffeine, giving up alcohol. Some people even do bigger food fasts and showing how they can kind of discipline their body if they're going to focus on God. Again, in doing research about this, you can also see that sometimes we put that focus in some other areas that are maybe not the best. And you can hear that some suggestions people give may not really be about what they want themselves to give up, but what they want somebody in their life to give up that would make things a little bit easier for them. So I heard suggestions about, like, give up cracking your knuckles. Give up backseat driving. Give up using certain phrases like literally or I can't even or that's so fire. Although I'm sure, you know, kids would like if I didn't use words like that sometimes and try to be cool. Or the classic give up telling bad jokes, which again would be very hard for me, but one that might not be just for you. My favorites, though, were seeing sites that were selling something so that you could achieve your Lent goals. So they were encouraging you, be really focused, be really disciplined, but make sure you give me some money to help you on your way. So there were sites where you could buy cards that you can use to keep track of all the compliments you say to your family, or the things that you're going to give away, or the chores you're doing, or how many days it's been that you've given something up. Which, again, all of those things are good to do, but it's interesting that somebody feels like in order for you to do that, you have to give them money. There was also a link to buy a soda stream so that you could drink carbonated water if you wanted to give up soda for Lent. So again, right, we're leveraging our opportunity the best we can. There was another site that gave links to buy cookbooks so that if you were giving up eating out, you'd be able to spend money with them and then cook at home. My favorite one, though, I mean, this is almost beautiful in its naked and unabashed ambition, was please buy the book that I wrote about saving money so that during Lent you won't spend money on things that you don't need. I mean, that's just like beautiful almost how much it's really just going for it. Right, and so the thing that comes to mind for me with that is one of the really popular things for kids to watch on YouTube and TikTok and things like that these days is these internet challenges, right? Like, I'm going to do something to prove how awesome I am or what weird thing I can put myself through. And I don't know if we start to let that creep into our Lenten practices, even though it might give some focus or some sense of control, if that's the metaphor that's going to help our relationship with God the most. And the other thing is I think about, if we put that laser focus on trying to show what we can control, what does it mean for our relationship with God then if we fail at our attempted thing that we're in control of? Does that mean that we are going to break something in our relationship with God? Or even on the other hand, what happens if we succeed? Does that mean that we've actually learned less reliance on God and more reliance on ourselves? With all of this stuff, it just occurred to me that it might be hard sometimes to actually get down to what the root and true meaning of Lent and what it's supposed to be and how it can play an important role in our faith lives. Even that tension of should I give something up or take something up, right? Am I supposed to be focused on improving a vice? Or am I supposed to be focused on showing how I can sacrifice a good thing and make God more important? Or again, is there actually this whole other deeper purpose that we can find, especially with God's leading? Maybe if we understood where Lent came from, that would help us. The practice of Lent does not appear specifically in the Bible, but it was solidified at the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century. And probably what that was doing is kind of making official and convening a bunch of different trends that had come up as practices throughout the early church, especially as it came to connecting to Easter as a key date when people, it wasn't the only date that this happened, but it was a key date that people who wanted to join the church would be baptized and come into the church, or people that had done something that broke relationship or done something wrong that they needed to be penitent for, that they would come back into reconciliation with the church. And so it became a practice that as Easter approached, people would have 40 days of preparation to join the church or to be restored to the church. And that evoked the 40 days of temptation that Jesus had in the desert of preparation for his ministry, as well as the 40 years in the desert that the Israelites had after coming out of Egypt, where God prepared them to go into the promised land. It's these times of formation that we can have through special connection with God, through focus on God, and that we face true challenges and temptations and try to learn some things about how our faith sustains us through even the most difficult seasons of life. And so as you hear that, it can probably make sense as to why that might be something that people would say, you know, we could probably let other people do this too. It doesn't just have to be new church members. It doesn't just have to be people being restored to full membership. It's a good thing for any of us to do that, to boost our relationship with God. And so then the practice of giving things up or taking things up for Lent really had that focus on preparation and planning and connecting with God that way. So you give things up to be able to put more focus on God, and you might take up some new practices to learn things that would help you in your faith as you went forward. But the real key for what that was supposed to do for folks' lives, I think, comes in an image for that baptism that became a focus often in Easter at the end of those 40 days, where baptism is meant to symbolize us dying to our old life and being restored to life in a new way of being. This would have been especially obvious to folks who were joining the early church, because they were joining a minority religion that was persecuted. So they knew, what I'm about to do is going to take some different things and stuff that I'm not used to. It's going to look a lot different than the normal rhythms and ruts of my life. And now we can think about that some too, but we probably don't relate to it quite the same way. But what's really important that we can learn from that image and from that background, I think, is that we're not trying to have a thing where we are showing that our perspective or our work or our effort is the best. We're ultimately really trying to have the opportunity to have God's perspective take over our life, dying to our own perspectives, dying to the pressures and expectations of other aspects of life, and letting God's perspective fill our minds, fill our mind's eye, and help us in our path forward in a new way of being. That can have aspects that are really humbling, that can have aspects that are really challenging, but hopefully we hear that the purpose ultimately is to be life-giving. So if we return to the cat and vole metaphor, we can imagine in this case that, like myself and Cohen watching our cat and the little vole out in the yard, God has that extra bigger perspective. He can see us trying to laser in, or he can see us frozen and trying to figure out what we're supposed to do, and knows that there's a bigger context and a better way that we could all be participating in. Right? We might be tempted to think that it's better to be the cat than the vole, at least, but there's a danger, like what happens in my family a lot, of thinking, yes, I'm going to show God what I can do and be disciplined and be focused and be in control, and so I'm going to bring this vole back and leave it as a nice little gift on my owner's porch. But trust me, especially if Wendy finds that vole, it's very clear that that is not a welcome gift, that there was something off about the focus of the cat and what was going to bring favor and connection, thinking that bringing that little vole was going to be what solved the thing. So we are trying to recognize that there are things in our life that have control over us and get a new perspective about that. We're also trying to recognize that our own sense of control is not sufficient for solving those problems and helping us be healthy. And so we can ultimately reconcile ourselves to God's perspective, to God's priorities, and all those things that we juggle in our lives and can ultimately fall into place and be healthiest for us and for other people. So God is like that owner saying, hey, I want the vole to have a happy life. I don't want a bunch of little voles and mice dying and then showing up gross on my porch. But I also want my cat to be well fed and to have exercise and get to run around. But I can offer a guide for how we can do all of those things together. I can offer the things that are needed in food and in toys and in some safety for the little voles and telling the cat, get away from there, like stop trying to eat them. Right, I can be a part of that. And so if we let God have that role in our lives, it can become something that's healthy and whole for all of us in all of our context. And our passage in Luke today really brings home and emphasizes that theme and that idea of how God's perspective is so important to us. Let's remember, first of all, that Jesus is telling this story as we're going through Luke. You can remember the context. Jesus is telling this story after he has turned resolutely towards Jerusalem. So he knows he's going to be doing things in his ministry that confront earthly powers, that do cause potential conflict, and that followers of him may not know exactly what they're signing up for, so he wants them to start to understand it and be prepared and know that God is with them even when things get difficult. So this type of story helps with some of that. And I think we can put our own struggles that we've been experiencing, especially in the last year, but any time in our lives where we're really feeling that, and know that speaking into our lives that way is helpful for us as well. And then also, if you remember Jeannie's wonderful sermon last week about Mary and Martha, how Jesus has also just taught before this, them, and then therefore us and the other disciples as well, how we can have tasks that we do, stuff that we keep busy on, or we can have sitting and listening and learning and connecting. We can have those things be acts of love and ways that we can connect with God, or there can be ways that we put expectations on ourselves and put up barriers, and that Jesus wants them to be things that are ultimately life-giving for us. So we see these parables with that theme of watchfulness, like all the different ways of having perspective, whether you're a vole or a cat or an owner, and trying to find the right perspective is guided ultimately first by the master, and how that can help us determine what to do or what not to do, what to take up or what to set aside. That's the best for our health, the best for the health of those around us, and the good of the household, in the metaphor of the parable, or the world around us. What are some of the things that help us really see that? First off, I think it's amazing that we see that we get to follow a master who serves. This is a quote right in the middle after we've been watchful for the master. He will have them recline and he will come wait on them. We can trust that when we open ourselves up to watchfulness, that what God will be leading us to, even if they are challenging or stretching, are ultimately gifts that help us be better taken care of. They're not oppression. They're not expectations. They're not full of pressure. They will be life-giving to us, and we can even learn our own ways of being life-giving to other people by following our master's example, where our watchfulness brings mutual, circular, constantly fulfilling each other service back and forth. We also see from this parable that we're encouraged not to just have our watchfulness be about taking care of our own little corner of the universe. And I know that probably all of the group projects we ever did all through school and ever since then has taught us, like, I prefer the group project if it's like, you did this part, you get your own grade, I did this part, I get my own grade, or whatever else, than worrying about if somebody dropped the ball and then we're all going to get C's or something while some of us felt like we did really good. In God's kingdom, if we take care of each other, if we ensure that we have the things that we need, if we don't say, I'm going to do the best and I'm going to like mistreat other people or mess things up for them or show how I'm better than them, that's how God makes sure the whole household is functioning at its best and what God will honor, because that's how God treats us as well as the servants. Sometimes we can worry that if we don't show how we're better than others, that that will keep us from proving our worthiness to God. But when we share each other's burdens, when we find common solutions, even if it's not our own favorite, that does end up being the thing that is best for wholeness and healing and a true life going forward with God for all of us. The practice of taking on God's perspective is most about being faithful. It's not about being perfect or powerful. We do our best with what we have, and God makes sure that the fruit multiplies in life-giving ways for all of us. And then the story of Naaman that we read this morning and his healing gives us a wonderful sort of specific picture of how servants who are watchful and take on God's perspective can have amazing impact on the world around them that we can take on for ourselves in our own specific life circumstances. Being watchful and learning the perspective of God helped a servant girl be able to see an enemy with compassion and seek something good for him. And this planted the seeds of peace between two kingdoms where there was a lot of tension before. Being watchful and learning the perspective of God helped Elisha not be insecure or intimidated when a general from another country came and knocking at his door. Not only that, it helped him see the full picture that not only was Naaman's leprosy hurting his existence, but his own insecurity about it. His own overcompensation about that leprosy was also harming him. And so he had all this pride that was getting in the way and needed healing for all of it. And then we even see Naaman's servants, their brave watchfulness and knowing how to speak to their master and say, I know you might want to like come after me for telling you something different, but maybe you should give this Elisha guy a chance. Humble yourself a little bit and see if you can be healed. All of these examples of watchfulness. And those are contrasted with the king of Israel's perspective, his fear, and Naaman's pride before he was willing to do the baptizing in the Jordan. Because that made them want to do things that maybe seem like spiritual practice, like, yeah, I'll go baptize in another river, or let me, you know, maybe as a king, I'll send something special to another king and show that I'm listening to him. But it was trying to prove themselves as special. It wasn't participating in God's full life-giving ways of being. And so it was empty. But when Naaman is able to humble himself and take on some of that own watchfulness for his life, opening up to God's perspective, we see an amazing thing happen. You see it in verse 15, and I don't know if you caught it. The whole dynamics of who's impressive, who's in charge, who's not, who's a servant, it gets flipped on its head because Naaman addresses Elisha and says, "Let me as your servant, let Naaman as the servant of Elisha. Not a ruler, not a general, a servant. Let me do something to show you thanks." And Elisha actually resists, saying, "Yeah, let me take on the ruler position in this relationship. We're together under God's perspective and under God's care." Through that willing watchfulness, God's perspective takes over the entire situation and everyone who's got a stake in it. And then they get to live the beauty of, yeah, maybe I'll do a task, maybe I won't do a task. Maybe I'll give something up, maybe I'll take something up. But all of it will ultimately be in service first of living in love together for each other's benefit and in following God. To be extra on the nose, if you read on in this story, Naaman decides to take a few donkey loads of dirt from Israel with him, so that we are very clearly shown that they are all on common ground. So as we enter our own season of Lent, how can we give up being like a bull or being like a cat, so that we can refocus ourselves on God and learn how our faith can be a resource in difficult times? How can we listen to the lessons of Jesus' parables and Naaman's healing and be more like the servant girl? Be more like Naaman. Be more like the servant girl. Be more like Elisha. Be more like Naaman's servants. Be more like Naaman after he's been opened himself up to God's perspective. We know we all need it. It's been a really hard year. We're ready to know that our faith feels like a resource and a comfort and not just like something that's a pressure all of the time. We do want to be a blessing for all the hard things that we see happening around us, but the best way to do so, I know, often seems clouded and blocked, and how do we move forward? How do we experience God in all those struggles? One of the memes I'm seeing coming up a lot, as sort of jokey comments on the internet, is that this year for Lent, I'm just giving up. Not giving up something, I'm not giving up this thing, chocolate, food, meat, whatever. I'm just giving up. Right? It sounds silly, it sounds maybe sacrilegious or nihilistic, but there is, I think, a way that we could hear it profoundly and take that as sort of a gift and an encouragement for ourselves this season, especially with all we're going through. We can let Lent not be about doing something to look busy. We can let Lent not be about striving or proving something. We can just say, "God, help me during this season to learn to be watchful. Help me to learn to take on your perspective about my own life, about my own feelings and reaction to things, about all the turmoil that's happening around me, to me and to people I love and the people that I know you want your love shown to." We can expect, when we offer ourselves up, whatever that looks like for each of us, for watchfulness and God's perspective that way, that we can expect that God will show up and, like in the parable, take care of us, serve us the way that the master is seen serving the servants in Jesus' words. Don't resist it. Don't feel like you're not allowed to have that. Don't feel like you're not allowed to look for that from God because of what the season is. I think that there should be some stepping back, some recharging, some recalibrating. That's good. We can also, of course, though, from the picture of Jesus' parables and from the story of Naaman, expect that our watchfulness will help us empathize with others and find ways to be mutually supportive in what we're all dealing with. So it's not like we have to go and do everything for everybody else and not know that we're going to be cared for ourselves. We'll have that circle the same way that we saw the circle happen, especially in the story of Naaman. We can welcome those chances they come, not as big tasks, but as life-giving waters that we get to immerse ourselves in with each other and be healed by. And maybe that could even happen with people that we're worried right now with everything that's going on or are feeling more like enemies than like friends, and just like Naaman and Elisha. We will have to give up for this to happen. We'll have to give up our pride. We'll have to give up having things only our own way. We'll have to give up expecting to be served or listened to without mutually serving and listening to others. We'll have to give up the idea that we're only worthy if we've accomplished certain things before God. We'll have to give up the idea that we're not good enough for God to use to help even with things that seem really big. And we'll have to give up the idea that our faith is only helpful after we've proved ourselves through some extreme exertion or pain. And I promise that we can trust that when we do, when we give up this way, that we will see how God gives us the gifts that we need to rise to challenging experiences, to find a life that can overcome obstacles and transform struggle and get us through the most difficult of times. A life that is not a burden, even when it stretches us, but a life that is a gift and helps us meet whatever that we need and have God's presence with us in every moment. That's what I send you out in this week, wherever it is that you go to, whatever practice that you may feel as you offer yourself to God. God, help me be watchful. God, give me your perspective. If there's something for me to do to help that, let me see it. Not as a striving to you, but as a gift from you that'll help me in all those connections and all those possibilities. Go knowing that you serve a master who loves and serves you even more. Go knowing that as God's Spirit empowers you through that service, that the impact you will have on the lives of those around you is more than you can imagine and more that seems possible from someone just like you. Go in grace and peace. Thank you.